Accession number 28699, Reel 2.
Mr. Casey, Reel 2. Was it a comfortable upbringing that you had?
Oh, yes, yes. It was a very strange thing with my father. I mean, he earned a lot of money. When my uncle was earning £2 something at the steelworks, my father had £100 a week, which is an incredible fortune. But he was a compulsive gambler, so he never had any money. He just lost every penny he ever earned. I mean, in the war, he was in Manchester at the Palace Theatre in Pantomime earning £450 a week. Now, that was in 1941, 42. That is a fortune. As soon as he had a couple of weeks out of work, he was borrowing money. I can remember when I was living in Liverpool, after I was married and my family, he came to the races and he came to my house and my cousin Eli was with him. And I said, "How did he get on, Dad?" And he said, "Okay, I didn't lose anything." And he went into the kitchen. Now, this was about 1950. And Eli said, "He hasn't told you, he won £3,000 on the first race." He had £3,000 to two a horse in the first race now, and that in 1950. That's £100,000, isn't it, on the first race. And he'd lost it over the other three, other five races, lost the other 3,000. So I've never known anybody who backed like him. I mean, people today will talk about having 5,000, 10,000. He had the equivalent of 100,000. And
did it affect the relationship between him and your mother?
She was the most pliant woman, I suppose, is the word. I thought it was dreadful, you know. I mean, all his life he earned a lot of money. The last time he worked, he was 72, and he was earning £275 a week. And that was in 1964. Still a lot of money. He took ill, and I had to keep him for the year until he died. And then I had to keep my mother for 7 years till she died. He didn't have a home, you know. He was in a flat in Blackpool. He'd bought a house in Gisborough for £3,000. I mean, it was quite funny because he'd obviously been winning. And they arrived at this house on the Sunday. And the fella said, "Well, you can have it because the other bloke hasn't been able to get the mortgage. And you said you're going to pay cash." My father said, "Yes. Let me give him it." And she had a carrier bag with £3,000 in. And the man said, "You mean it's real cash? I thought it was a cheque." He said, "Oh, no, it's 3,000 quid in that carrier bag." He said, "Oh, God, I can't put it in the bank. It's Sunday night." And then, at the same time, he bought a house for me in Stockton, where they used to live, which I think was £1,200. I was just fighting, and when I came on leave, which was about 4 months later, he had an £800 mortgage on my house and a £2,000 mortgage on his. And then he said, "Now, I'll have to sell your house to you. We'll do a deal. I've got this fella, estate agent, he'll do a deal for us. I'm selling it to you for £2,000, you see, officially, so you can get a mortgage," which I did. And I reckon I was the only man who ever got a £1,400 mortgage on a £1,200 house, because that's what I got. But that meant I now own the house, and I have a £1,400 mortgage, which, as long as he's got some money, he can pay it. But if he hasn't, I have to pay.
And did he smoke and drink?
He didn't drink, completely teetotal. He used to say that to me about the gambling. I said, "Well, I don't drink." I said, "How much can you drink?" I said, "You could get drunk on champagne every night with you and all your mates, and you still can't spend as much money as you do on the horses." But he smoked, and then he smoked in his act as well. It was a big part of his act, the way he smoked, mouthfuls of smoke. But again, he could stop smoking. If he had a bad chest, he could stop for 2 or 3 weeks and then start again. And he stopped drinking when he had a row with my mother when I was a baby, a very tiny baby. And she went back home to her mother's in West Hartlepool and left him. And he came on the Sunday and she said, well, you just have to cut down the drinking, you know. And he said, I won't drink again. She said, well, that's silly. But just, he said, no. And he never had another drink. And yet he couldn't give up gambling. Weird. And he was the most generous man you'd ever meet. But then gamblers are, you know, because it's all monopoly money, isn't it, really? And
what did you, as a growing teenage lad, other than school we're talking about now, what were the activities that you personally got up to?
Oh, well, I played.
The time of yeah. The little gang of the girls and what have you.
Come well, yes, I used to go around with the... See, I went away when I was 14, but, you know, we were all in gangs and things and with the girls, but then we didn't really know what to do with them at that age, 12, 13, in those days. And when I went away, then I used to only be at home on holiday. So it was an artificial sort of existence at home.
Did you get involved with your father's act and your ultimate, you know, subsequent writings that before you went in the army? Or
no, no.
This is after?
After.
Oh, well, we can come to that
yeah,
later.
Yeah, after. I used to sport. I was keen on sport, cricket, rugby. I used to play rugby for Stockton and play cricket for Preston up the road. Boxing I was very keen on, and I was keen on boxing at school and in the army. But as I say, once I went away to Ratcliffe at 14, I started to learn and read, and I was a voracious reader.
You were starting quite a bottom line, weren't you?
Oh yes, and as I say, I arrived, you know, having been bottom but one of the class, and by the end of the year in Ratcliffe I was second, and I did well in this, you know, school certificate, and it was difficult, more difficult in those days, because the school certificate, which is the equivalent of whatever they call it, GCE today, actually, you had to get all of it together. You couldn't take parts. And I remember vividly, you had to get, in my case, French and English and maths. And you could, if you got 5 credits, you got matriculation exemption, so you qualified for university. Well, I took 7 subjects, I got 6 credits, and failed in French, so I got nothing. So I had to take it all again 3 months later. By which time they'd changed the rules, and you didn't have to pass in French now. So I went to the exam thinking, well, it doesn't matter, does it? I know I'll get through the others. So this time I got 7 credits because I got a credit in French. And the reason was, the thing that killed me, which was trying to translate from French into English, this time I just picked out the words I knew, and then I thought, well, I wonder what that is. It's probably something. And I did it like that. I didn't care. And again, it's one of these memories I keep. In the first time, for that exam, I got 79 out of 100. The second time, I got 71, which was a credit. So I got 7 credits. And then I was supposed to go to Cambridge. And in fact, I went for an interview at St. Catherine's College in Cambridge to study law, I was supposed to do. By which time, of course, the war was on and that. And I didn't want to go. And I remember saying to the headmaster that I didn't think my father could afford it because of the bankruptcy. He said, well, that's all right, Jim. We will give you our top scholarship and you don't have to sit for it. Because I was head boy then, exactly. Head prefect, they used to call it. And I thought, oh, God, you know, I don't want to go. But my father's keen and my mother and now the headmaster. And I think the other thing I remember, which was made me feel very, very big-headed, really, was, as the head boy, you made a couple of speeches. The first speech was where you toasted the president and the school, and the whole school was there, and about 100 old boys and the bishop and all kinds. and I had to make this speech. And at the end of it, the headmaster came over to me and said, "Did you write it all down, Jim?" I said, "Oh, yes, Father." He said, "Can I have a copy? I'd like to keep it." So I said, "Oh, well, hey." And then, the end of the year, when I was leaving, the debating society used to have a dinner, and the ones who were leaving, somebody proposed a toast of the emeriti, I think it's called, and I had to reply, which I did. And when I sat down, the headmaster was there, said, "Jim, you must go to Cambridge. You have oratorical powers." Well, I just managed to get my head through the door, I think. But I then arrived at Cambridge for 3 days to be informed that I was being given 12 months exemption from being called up, which it would have been when I was 19. And I thought, I don't want it. And I went home, and the father said, "Oh, the letter says you have to go and sign the documents in Middlesbrough to say you've got the 12 months exemption." And I went down to Middlesbrough, the recruiting office, and argued for 20 minutes with this major until I finally was in the army. I was in the RAC, and I came home. I thought, "Oh God, what am I going to say?" And in the end, I just said, "Well, I'm sorry, but I'm in the army."
How did you take it? How was the book?
Well, they were very well. My mother was very, very upset. My father was a bit upset, but on the other hand, he rather liked the idea of me being a soldier, you know, because he'd been one of the first war.
In those years coming up, I know you're in this school down in Bristol, but were you aware were you aware that things were happening on the continent prior to the outbreak of war, you know, the 1930s?
No, I don't. We never really heard anything about it until the war started, and then it all poured out, all the terrible atrocities and all this, you know, 1939. Well, I was at school till 1941. Left July 41.
Did you feel that you wanted to get into it before it went over?
Oh, yes, yes. That's why I didn't want to go to Cambridge. I thought, they'll finish it before I can get in. And I want to fight the Nazis, you know. I mean, I was not quite 19, so you're entitled to be a bit stupid, you know. I mean, I could have gone to Cambridge, done a year, gone into the forces, gone straight to Octo, and joined the regiment that I did join, and I've had a year in Cambridge. And when the war ended, I would have been demobbed immediately to go back to Cambridge instead of waiting a year. So I could have had 2 years at Cambridge and still had the same war as I had. But you didn't think about that. I mean, I think I would have been a different person anyway.
What was the actual process of joining? You say you went down to the...
Well, I just went and finally this fellow said, okay, and I signed up. And I didn't want to go... I wanted to go in the RAF, but then I thought my father and mother would go berserk because we'd had all the, you know, first of the few stuff and everybody being killed. So I joined the tanks, RAC. I thought, well, that's not too bad in their eyes. And then, of course, I was commissioned in the tanks.
But where did you go to as the first camp?
Catrick. I went to Catrick camp. And
have you got memories of your reception there on that very first day?
Not so much the first day, but what I remember about Catrick was it was cold. It was bitter. And everybody shouted, and you ran around, and everybody, all the NCOs, with one exception, used a lot of bad language, chasing you. But it was okay. I mean, it was a piece of cake for me in a way, because I'd just come from school. Now, the other lads, most of them, had left school at 14. You know, and we're doing things, training, learning. It was easy for me. And it was a struggle for a lot of them. So after about 6 weeks, I was made an unpaid acting lance corporal with one stripe on one arm.
What date was this when you joined?
1941. It would be September 1941, yes.
Can we go through the basics of it all now? The accommodation that you first went in there when you faced that?
Well, it was just in a hut. And there was about, 25, 30 of us in a hut. Which was wooden floors and a bed. And then outside was the wash basins and the toilets and all that. It was okay. quite adequate, except cold. It was winter, and...
And you'd have to keep the hut clean, obviously.
Oh, yes. And the trouble was, when they had been acting, owned by Lance Corporal, I now was in charge of the fellas I joined up with. And I now have to tell them what to do. And your turn to clean the toilets and things. I mean, that's the worst job I ever had in the army.
And it was very difficult with people to come in with.
And I always remember the second day, one of the lads had a go at me, you see, and said if it wasn't for the stripe on my arm, so. So I said, right, and I took him outside, took the tunic off, and belted him. And I didn't have any trouble after that. But the other thing was, they asked for volunteers to join the boxing team. So I said straight away, yes, because I was captain of boxing at Radcliffe College. So they all said, oh, you're mad. You'll be fighting professionals. You get murdered. And they couldn't have been more wrong, because the sergeant major, the regimental sergeant major, and the colonel were both mad on boxing. So once you got into the boxing team, you were excused all guards and fatigues. Well, as a recruit, all you did was guards and fatigues. So when the rest of the lads were putting their overalls on to go and peel spuds, I used to put my best uniform on and go into Catterick. And I used to go home every weekend to Stockton. And, you know, it was great. And then because, as I say, I'd been studying until I went in, it was all very easy stuff. And so first I was made a drill instructor, assistant to the sergeant. And it was a very good arrangement, because he used to take the drill the first hour, which meant I had to lie in and could go down and get my breakfast in comfort and nice. And then at 4 o'clock I took over on my own, and he went home. So I did the last hour on my own, he did the first hour on his own. So it was great. And I did, you know, a bit of boxing. I got the category championship, and then I went to OCTU, the officer's training at Blackdown, and then we moved to Sandhurst.
Can we come back again to those first days? Were you issued with uniform as soon as you got in?
Yes.
What did they issue you with?
Well, battle dress and all of the stuff, gas capes, whatever, you know. I remember the battle dress stunk of this chemical that was to, I suppose, stop you getting lights or something, I don't know, but it was pretty awful.
Were you measured for it, or how did they give
no,
it
to you? No, they sort of sized you up and said, right, that's your size, you know. I mean, if you didn't fit, you asked them to change it, and, you know. But it was more or less thrown at you.
You just lined up and go along the counter.
That's right. You went, get this, get that, get this, get that, you know.
Taking to those big, heavy...
boots.
Boots.
Yes.
How did your feet get on?
Not bad, really. I mean, they were a bit... I wasn't used to them, of course. Ordinary shoes, but they were okay. One of the memories I had, which I didn't like, was when I was... As a Lance Corporal, I was put in charge of turning the water on in about 30 huts. And I came out this morning and dashed out, went flat on my face in about a foot of snow. And I must have broken the world record going round turning on the water on at the different huts before I got back and got myself warmed up. Other than that, it was okay. And
did you learn the processes of keeping your uniform clean? And
oh, yes.
Or was that, yeah. Or was it something you just picked up as you went along?
Well, there was nobody taught us. But, I mean, you know, you learn, you put your trousers under the mattress and just all those sorts of things. And then, as I say, I was doing the drill, which was made life easier.
And obviously, initially, that was new to you.
Oh, yes, yes.
And
but I was very... I took to it very easily.
Yeah, and it seemed to me, I thought you must have picked it up pretty quickly.
Yes, and I mean, he used to get me out to demonstrate, and I'd throw the rifle and catch it and all this sort of thing, spin it, you know. And he used to say, "See, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's simple, Private Casey, Corporal Casey, so, and I'd sling the rifle about, and there you are.
Had you been issued with your own rifle from the time you went in?
I think so. Certainly very quickly, yeah. And then, you know, they wanted me to stay on as a gunnery instructor. And I said, look, I've joined this to fight, to get into the war. I don't want to be an instructor at Catterick. So then they sent me off to officers' training.
So this is essentially the basic training weeks that you were
there? Yes, yeah.
And exactly. Of course you got this promotion in the middle of it because of being so
well,
good at it.
Not close. But then I'd say I went to Octu. Blackdown, I don't remember a lot about it. I mean, we went round in tanks. But Sandhurst, I remember. And that
so
was
how long were you in Blackdown?
I think about a month. And then we went off to Sandhurst. And then it was tough. And they chased you from morning till night.
Can you take me through the Sandhurst experience, in effect? What happens when you arrive there for the first time?
Well, I don't vividly remember arriving. But it used to have to get up at be on parade at 6:15 in the morning. You used to get a cup of tea and two biscuits, which is called gunfire. And then you were on parade in your gym kit. And you drilled, jumped up and down, physical exercise, for about 20 minutes. So even though it was cold and freezing, you were soon warm. And then you were in to go and get washed and get into breakfast. And then you started training. It was either drill. You did do tanks eventually. But
still in the RAC, in effect. Yeah. You were
in the RAC. There's the change. Sandhurst, he was doing RAC then, apparently. I think that's all. And
the uniform you wore for this basic drill, was it the one that you'd been given, the khaki? Or
oh, yes.
Did you have
the
denims or the
khaki? No, no. For drill, it was the ordinary battle dress. You had things for other things, like, I mean, we used to have to swim with the full kit on and then go up, carry somebody up the hill on your back. It was physically tough, but I was very, very fit. You see, I'd been training the boxing and all this, and in fact, I put weight on at Sandhurst. Everybody else lost weight.
The instructors at Sandhurst, where did they come from?
Oh, I don't know, but they were
the guards, people.
Yes, a lot of them were guards.
How did they address you? I mean, you were officer cadet.
Well, the first sergeant major there, Brand, I think he was called, famous man, and he elected us, and he said, "And I will call you sir, and you will call me sir." And everybody was terrified of him. And I mean, we had this ridiculous thing. We'd sit in a classroom, and he'd be lecturing us about something, this fella, to do with drill or something. And he'd say, "Do you understand me?" And nobody said anything. And he said, "Do you understand?" So you'd got this thing where you sit in there and he asks you a question and you all say, "Sir!" at the top of your voice in his classroom. I thought, we're idiots. Anyway.
So, sorry, I want to get a picture of Sandhurst, if we can. You're obviously doing a lot of drill.
Yeah.
Discipline, you're in the domain, must be an extra history.
Yes, everything. And, you know, it was all those things of shouting across the yard at you. Idle button, which meant one of your buttons was undone. And the only time I saw him caught out, and he was very embarrassed, was one of the lads had come there, having been in action, and he'd been wounded, you see, in his arm. And when we were marching, his arm wasn't going straight out, you see. It was bent. And he suddenly shouted at him, whatever his name was, "So, straighten your arm!" And he said, "Can't, sir, wounded!" And this sergeant major's face just collapsed because he'd never been in action, you know. And we all went, "Good lad."
And the actual officer's training itself, because you are trained to take command of men, aren't you?
Yes.
What form did that take?
Well, just you'd be put in charge of things. It'd be your turn to do this and that today. You'd be so-and-so today, you know.
And you took the rest of your group?
Yes, you'd take the rest and you'd be in charge on that thing, whatever you were doing.
Do you record any of the things that you did do?
Not really. As I say, it was all physical, very demanding, physically everything. Then you got into tanks and then, you know, sometime you'd be the tank commander, you'd be the troop leader, you know.
And that was a leader in charge of a tank rather than driving and gunfiring and all.
Well,
that.
No, yes. No, I don't think we did the gunnery in that. The staff did that. But we would be, you'd be in charge of the tank, and then you'd be in charge of the troop, you know. So what, that was the kind of experience you got.
What tanks were you being trained on?
There weren't Shermans, it was before the Shermans, it was Valentine's, I think. I think Valentine tanks, which were pretty awful. Crash gearboxes and all that, you know, no clutch, you know. And I think my most amusing memory, it was so lovely. The fellow in my room, his father was a general or something, and so he wasn't too happy about this. I thought it was lovely, funny. We didn't have batmen, you had civilian servants, they called them. And we had one between two, you see, instead of one each. And this fellow's polishing his buttons and things, our buttons and that. And I'm talking to him, and I said, things must be very different now, you know. And he said, oh, yes, sir. It's not like it was when the gentlemen were here. Well, I just fell about. And this fellow was most annoyed.